Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Love the 80s? Then you'll love Virgin Radio 80s Plus.
Love Chris Evans. Love the 80s.
Over on Virgin Radio.
80s Plus.
Pass us over to you.
We have nothing but love for our next guests. They've been getting away with it for almost 40 years and still no plans to sit down. Their new album, Yummy, is out now and they're about to go on tour. But first, with the classic Say Something, it's James!
Say something.
Here we go, it's coming, I can feel it. Yeah, baby! Good morning, Tim and Jim and Mark and Chloe. Good morning, James.
Good morning. And you didn't even notice I started in the wrong key.
Well, no, but I noticed that you noticed. But I didn't know what you noticed because that's, I don't know, I didn't know. What happened? What happened there then?
Oh, we didn't set a note beforehand.
Oh, well, you couldn't tell. I really
hey, we're the masters
tell.
Of getting away with it.
All right, so here we go. So here we go. You've had... is it 9 top 10 albums so far? This is your 18th album, Yummy. It's out now, and it's number one of the midweeks. But you've sort of been here before midweek-wise. Who did for you last time?
Adele,
oh.
I think.
Came blast that Adele lady.
And this week we have the wonderful Beyoncé.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe her star has peaked. I don't know. But it's exciting times nonetheless.
Exciting times. I mean, for a band that's been going 41 years, we'll take that.
Of course you'll take that. And James are here in no small thanks to something that happened between a school disco and a scout hut. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, a university disco. I was dancing wildly on the dance floor, as
right.
I do. My girlfriend had left me, so I was particularly like throwing myself around.
Jimmy, lots of reasons.
Lots of reasons. And Jimmy here was stealing my drink, but they were watching me going, he's an interesting dancer.
Right.
And I went over and went, oh, you're stealing my drink. And three of them stood up. And I was like,
yeah,
help
can I
yourself.
Get another one?
Yeah, okay, get another one. And they said, like you're dancing, we've got a band. Would you like to dance for us? And they wrote their number on the back of my hand, and I woke up in a hangover state the next morning with this strange number written on my wrist, and followed that up.
And you rehearsed in a scout hut. Is that what happened? Is that?
Yeah, Withington Scout Hut. Yeah, in Manchester.
How cool is that? Big up Withington Scouts there.
I know. They've knocked it down, unfortunately.
Oh,
it's not there anymore. I know. It's
sad, she's had some kind of preservation order on it.
I'd like to think so.
When was so pre-Tim, yeah. When was the first time you ever plugged anything in that scout hall? And you were called Tribal something, weren't you, at the time?
Well, Tribal Outlook, Model Team International, before they took us to court. There was a modelling agency in Manchester called Model Team International. And Paul had a girlfriend at the modelling agency, so we'd get T-shirts with the name on.
Right.
And then this guy came down to the Cypress Tavern where we were playing and said, no, you can't call
your
band.
It was the T-shirts that did it.
The T-shirts that did it.
Yeah, if you hadn't been greedy, you'd have been fired.
Exactly. So then we were Model Team for a bunch of kind of time. And then, yeah, James.
Do you remember the first time Tim pitched up in the scout hut? Do you, Tim?
No, I don't think I do.
Yeah, I do. It was like, oh, they're promising. I mean, it was very simple.
That's very kind of you.
could have been another name.
I liked it. It was like, it was very naive and innocent, but it had some magic to it that was, you could just see, you know, was unusual. It was post-punk time, so, you know, playing brilliant solos wasn't it. It was about originality and unusualness.
Yeah, no,
had,
I know. And Tony Wilson, Hacienda, you know, etc. I know it's all part of the story. And so they asked you to come and dance because you were funky and they could do with a bit of that on stage. How did you cross the Rubicon to become the singer? What happened?
They got rid of the other singer. And
did they know you could sing, though?
They, like, within a week, I was...
Did you know you could sing? Sorry.
No, I didn't really. Right. I hadn't sang since I was about 11 in the choir. And I didn't know I could write lyrics. And they, I was within a week, I was shaking a tambourine and singing backing vocals, supporting Orange Juice in Sheffield and you know, terrified.
I mean, come on.
And then we
those were the days.
Those were the days. Back of a butcher's van driving to gigs.
In at the deep end, man.
Yeah, man, it was completely like that.
Oh, gosh. So what's nice about all bands coming in, you know, I know you've been here before. It was great last time you came. It's great now. Is that we can have a bit of an origin, you know, sort of throwback. Can you give us, over the last 41 years now, congratulations, by the way. What's the biggest the band's been?
Now. We sell more tickets now than we.
No, I didn't mean that. I mean, like, from
size.
Personnel. Have you ever been like Eagles? Well?
Weight personnel. Now it's still now.
Many people?
Nine piece.
Nine piece.
Yeah.
Full time nine piece.
Yeah. Two.
You're right up there with UB40 and Goldie Looking Chain and all that, aren't you?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So nine's the biggest it's ever been.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
All right. Some peaks on along the way. Some highlights along the way.
I mean, last summer we played the Acropolis with an orchestra and gospel choir, and it's the oldest musical venue in the world. I mean, it dates back to Plato and blah, blah, blah. And we were like in this amphitheater, and the Acropolis is behind it.
The original Hacienda.
Absolutely. I mean, it was so hot, they actually closed it all down about 4 days later. So we just got in and we filmed it. So we're looking forward to editing that and getting into that.
Oh, and one of your songs was a big hit on American college radio, is that right?
That's
Which
right.
one was that? Was
Laid.
That? Laid. All right. So what does having a hit on American college radio, what does that do for you as a band in the US?
I mean, we were doing really well. We were playing to about 4,000 or 5,000 in most cities. And the Laid album sold over a couple million in America and did really well for us. And then we followed it up with an improvised industrial album called Wawa, which completely was financial suicide, commercial suicide. But, you know, for a moment, we were contenders, mate. We were contenders.
Yeah, I know, but every stone is a stepping stone to the future, isn't it? And to the eventual present, I suppose. Yeah.
I mean, the truth is, I don't think we could have handled America. It was so intense. And that level of fame, when I meet people who've been through it, it rings you out.
The good Lord has intervened and held us back occasionally, and I think for a good thing, to be honest with you.
Yeah, they do say, somebody saying yesterday about, you know, you never can never step in the same river twice. Obviously, we know that. I love that phrase.
Yeah.
But they pointed out yesterday, it's not just about the river being different, but the foot that's stepping in it is different. And they say you can never watch the same film twice because it's not just about watching the film and seeing things you've never seen before. You're a different person when you watch that film.
Oh, you're full of wisdom today, Chris.
Well, I just want to equate it to songwriting because obviously you are a lot older than you were and you'll be older still. Mm. Is there a period in your careers and your lives and your sort of band life when songwriting seems to have come more fluidly and more easily? I know it's always different, you know, are there peaks and there troughs? Do you have to be more reflective now? I don't know, just speak to that if you don't mind.
Songwriting has always been quite effortless for us,
right?
Four of us go in a room, jam, set a drum machine, no one takes anything in the room beforehand, and it's we do 6 hours a day and we do 100 jams, and then we choose which of the 100 we're going to work on amongst ourselves and make them into demos, and then
that's fun, man.
Whittle
it
down.
Sounds like fun.
We love it. It's so beautiful. We at the moment we're trying to hire a place in Broughton Hall in Yorkshire, overlooking the moors. You know, it's such.
Why not
get out in nature, away from everyone calling
you? We tend to go to a big house and just kind of all batten down the hatches and kind of live together for a week or so and just
right. Hang out with your mates
and
play.
Absolutely.
It's back to the Scout Hut.
One really of our favourite practices, really.
Because you have a sound. James have a sound. You know, and this you have that sound going on. It's in my ears, it's like, yes, it's a signature sound. Is there a place where you've recorded that's the most James-friendly?
I'd say at the moment, I mean, like this album, Yummy, we had more demos that we thought could have gone on the album than we've ever had. So we've released a follow-up to Yummy called Pudding, which is all the which is all the extra bits that didn't make it, because we've had more. So Yorkshire is
that what's called Pudding?
Yes, Yorkshire Pudding.
I thought it was like, I didn't know it was pudding for afters because you got more to come, or Yorkshire pudding. I didn't know which one. Better both.
Yeah, better both.
All right, well, congratulations. It's great to see you, honestly. You seem on great form. I'm so pleased.
Thank you.
And if you want to go and see James as they're playing these amazing gigs, you'll never have a better gig. You'll never be gigged better, whether you like it or not, than when you go and see James. Monday, 3rd of June, Aberdeen. Wednesday, 5th of June, Newcastle. Friday, 7th of June, Glasgow. And then you have Leeds on the 8th, Cardiff on the 11th of June. Wednesday, the 12th of June, Birmingham. Friday, June 14th, Manchester, Co-op Live. Saturday, 15th of June, London at the O2. WeareJames.com for tickets. What are you going to play for us next, please?
We're going to play Our World, which is the current single that's been doing the rounds.
All right, from Yummy, which is out now. How's that feel?
Great.
Come on, that's a great song, man.
Thank you. Oh, really appreciate it.
When does a band decide to do la-da-das in a song? I've always wondered that. When is it okay to la-da-da? Is it like when you're super confident?
Nah, I mean, that song, you know, because the lyric is so on the nail and could be a bit depressing,
yeah.
So we contrasted it with a very uplifting piece of music, and then the la-da-das are there.
Yeah, because it's not depressing at all. It's just, it's honest, it's real, it's in the now, it's a surrender to the moment. We're talking before about, you know, if you wake up every morning thinking in your own little dictatorship in your head, this is how life's supposed to be, then you're going to be disappointed that day. Whereas if you just wake up to how life is, then you're going to have a great day. And that's sort of where you are with that song.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we think it's a lyric that tells you where we're at right now.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. Somebody said on the show last week, tradition is just peer pressure from dead people. And that song reminds me of that sentiment.
Well, you're taking all these aphorisms. You're turning into Yoda here before our eyes.
Oh, I'm having a go, Tim. I'm having a go. Of course, James is here because of the Uni Disco and something that happened between the Uni Disco and the Scout Hut. But James, it's all down to Glennie's problem, isn't it? The fact that you called James, because you could have been called Paul, is that right?
Yeah, we wanted to name it after somebody in the band, and we couldn't name it Tim because he's the singer.
Well, why not? Why not?
Because it just felt like it was like a kind of solo project or
right.
something. So there's Gavin, which we thought was heavy metal for some reason. Yeah. I don't really know why we thought Gavin sounded heavy metal.
Yeah.
Which leaves James and Paul. And like, no one ever called me James anyway. I was Jimmy back then.
Yeah.
I'm Jim now. So it's never felt like my name anyway, to be honest with you. So I was more than happy to...
to give it to the band.
Absolutely.
I think James Paul as well sounds like a hairdresser.
He does a bit.
Or Paul James.
Yeah.
If you get two Christian names, put them together, you get most hairdressers.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. Right, so other peaks, recent peaks. Give us like a peak per decade. What was it? Give us an amazing moment that happened in the 90s. If you had to pick a moment for a James poster from the 90s, what would the moment be?
Two nights in G-Mex in Manchester, playing to 10,000 each night. And we hadn't been played on radio except John Peel. We hadn't been on TV, and yet we were selling out 20,000. And we filmed it, and we were shattered. And so the film has got this kind of like, will this band get through the gig?
Really?
Yeah, I was taking
oxygen. I love that.
I was taking oxygen. You know, it was like...
it actually oxygen?
Yeah.
Yes.
By
the way, nice falsetto early in the morning on the last. That was very punchy.
I had to warm my voice up in the cab. The poor cab driver on the way in, and he was complaining.
Yeah, he took it very well.
Exactly. Yeah.
He took it very well, actually. He was very supportive. He said he was going to listen to your show, actually. So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, very sweet.
All right, so go on. Two nights at G-Max. Yeah. What about peak in the noughties? Give us a noughties post.
Oh, noughties peak. Working with Brian Eno on the album Laid. And we attracted him for this demo of a song called Sometimes, which is still probably one of our favourite songs. And we hadn't, you know, hadn't written the lyric. And he was like, have you written the lyric yet in the studio? No, I haven't written it. So we kept delaying playing it. And then finally the band was surrounding him in Real World Studios. And we played the song and we got to the chorus and he went white. And he went and sat at his desk and put his head in his arms and his hands, and we were like, oh my God, he doesn't like it. And we all kind of finished the song, rather sheepishly surrounded him and went, "Are you okay, Brian?" And he said, "I think I've just had the highlight of my musical life." And we were like, "Oh my God." Because we had Brian Eno to us was God. Yeah. Yeah. It was musical God. Yeah. And so for him to say that, I think was one of the
most
amazing.
That was a moment and a half, isn't it?
Yeah. That was
amazing. So you had to pretend to be quite cool with that. And then.
No.
You
know, I don't think we did.
We didn't.
I think burst into tears.
James has never pretended to be cool. No. It's why we aren't as big as Oasis. You know, it's like cool has not been our middle name.
Oh, no, but you are. I think if you try and be cool, you're not. And if you try not to be cool, you might.
Yeah,
might
but that's
be.
The perspective of Yoda. That's that's not your guy in the street.
Cool you are. And what did he say? What did he find? What struck him so much about that particular track? Why did it have that effect on him?
Don't know. I think. It's a strange rhythm. Is it in, Jim?
It's in a strange timing. It's a 5-bar cycle, which is quite unusual. Ooh. So it's hard to I'm sorry. It's kind of hard to judge where the changes are going to come.
Right.
And Tim somehow magically has come up with a vocal that just sits right across all that.
What a lot.
Very, very difficult to do.
Best Glastonbury moment?
Do you like
playing Glastonbury? Of course you do.
Yeah. Who doesn't like playing Glastonbury?
I don't know. I don't know why I asked that question. I thought, what if they don't?
We had a number. I mean, we were second on the bill the year England were playing a football game, and the football game is on the big screen, and we had two sets prepared, one for if England lost, and we were gonna play some very sad songs, and one for if England won, and England won, so we got to play a bit
more. Oh my goodness me, the gig that never happened. Do you have it written down anywhere?
No, I don't think we do. I mean, we change the set every night in response to what's going on. So we had to do that.
Well, that's exciting, isn't it? So this sort of mini tour you're doing, it's substantial, but it's a sort of mini tour. We have the 8 dates. You go to tickets for tickets, wearejames.com. Once again, Aberdeen, Newcastle, Glasgow, Leeds, Cardiff, Birmingham, Manchester, London, throughout, what is it, just 12 days in June. That's beautiful, small and perfectly formed. Will the set list for those change around as well?
Yeah, every night.
That's cool, isn't it, man?
Well, it's the way we keep ourselves
fresh. Any rules
fresh.
Underneath that spontaneity?
There's probably 60 to 80 songs that we haven't, nearly ready to go.
What?
That need a sound check or two.
How are you that with Chloe? All right with that?
Terrified.
Yeah, I've got a surprise. Jeez. Woohoo! Exciting stuff.
Oh, she's totally game. James was always about taking risks.
Yes.
So, you know, our biggest gig we ever had with New Order, we sent Jimmy out to play acoustic guitar and Paul. Jimmy's never played acoustic guitar in his life. And that
terrible
was
on acoustic guitar.
I bet you're not. I bet you're terrible as the rest of our stream.
No, he is. He's terrible.
Is he?
Yeah. Cheers, Tim.
And that was at the Brixton Academy. And so our thing is, you've got to take risks, and the audience recognise that and appreciate it.
Yeah, and it's funny, isn't it? Because we're talking to Guy Ritchie about how he keeps it fresh on set. And he says, everybody can rehearse and everybody can learn the lines and they come and they changed it and that all goes, so there's a bit of spontaneity going on before, that's not working, but then they just roll, so they don't do any retakes on a Guy Ritchie movie, so they can roll and roll, so you can do it again, but you don't stop and retake, and that's the way he keeps it fresh and the way you keep it fresh. And doing a radio show every day, it's really important, isn't it? It's really important because people can tell. They can tell whether this is a spontaneous moment as life should be or it's not. It's a bit too safe for its own good, if you like.
Yeah. I mean, you've made a career out of that level of like, what am I going to say next? And you don't know. And that makes it more exciting.
Yeah, but then that can become the norm. So you've got to change that up sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's really interesting.
I finished a novel. I'm going to plug it. It comes out in about a month's time. And I didn't really have a plot. I'd put two characters in a room and they'd start talking. And I think they were going to go out the main door and they'd suddenly head towards the bedroom and it would be like, what are they doing? And you just follow it. You know, you just follow what the characters are telling you to do.
Yeah.
And it's the same in songwriting when I'm doing lyrics. I don't know. I never sit down and go, I'm going to write about the ecological problems or it's a political song or a song about mobile phones. You just start jamming and then those words come out and you go, oh, this song seems to be want to be about this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you follow that.
Because the words are coming in and then coming out, aren't they? So they're coming into you and then coming out.
Totally.
I love it. I love it. Can we have one more?
Oh, yeah.
Please, if you don't mind.
Yeah, we can do that. We'll do Is This Love?
All right. Also from Yummy. Yummy is out now. It's midweek number one. Will it be number one on Friday with your help? Perhaps yes.
Is this love? Is this love? Is this love? Is this love? Is this love?
Here we go again. Tim, biggest recurring theme in the songs you've written, the hundreds of songs you've written, the biggest recurring theme, is it? Would it be love? Is it always going to be love?
No, you know, I avoided love for years because it's such an overwritten area. So Fred Astaire was like the first, which took about 15 years. And but then the last, I don't know, the last couple of records have definitely been veering towards
coming back to love.
Questioning what love is. They're all different versions. So that one's more about love as a brick through a glass. Yeah. It's like one of those kind of like, oh, no, this is going to really mess up my life kind of love. So they're, and the last one was about roomy spiritual love, that kind of ecstatic sense of oneness that one gets occasionally when we're lucky, when we're running a marathon or meditating. Or
not that we like to talk about it. We never stop talking about it. Well done today. It's brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Good luck on Friday. I hope it gets to number one on your album.
Always a pleasure. Thank
okay.
you so much.
It's great to see you again. Can we hear it from the control room, please? First of all, for Mark's mixing board. Can we hear it for Mark and his mixing board? Thank you. Yay. Can we hear it for Glennie's Fred Perry t-shirt? Is it Fred Perry? It looks like Fred Perry. Sorry.
Okay.
And can we hear it for Chloe's leather jacket, which is just right up there? And can we hear it for Tim's epic strides? They may be the best trousers we've ever had in this building, and we've had some great trousers in this building. Let's hear it for James, guys! Yummy! Out now!
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
This is going to be something I'll remember, and that's a really lovely thing. I don't think I was able to do that in the past.
And James Bay. Come on, let
it go. Don't you agree that everybody needs someone when they feel alone?
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
How do you follow Live James? How about Live Jimmy? He's the multi-award winning comedian who's often on your telly and always on tour. He's about to embark on a brand new Laughs Funny Tour, and his Netflix special Natural Born Killer is out today. So buckle up, because you're listening to the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with We Buy Jimmy Carr.
Yeah!
Oh, superb.
Yes.
That's radio.
Just any Jimmy Carr, the Jimmy Carr. Jimmy, whistle stop. You finish your 950-odd date tour on Sunday in Berlin. So it's time for another.
Yes. Well, I finished in Berlin on Sunday, which was fun. It's fun. Where would we be without a sense of humour? Germany. It's missionary work over there, isn't it? And they're a great crowd because they get it. I opened up with, I said, oh, it's so good to be in Berlin because this town is so special to me. My grandfather was involved in the town planning. Well, I say that. He flew over a couple of times in the 40s. And they're all like, they're so into it. They're like, yeah, great. Like a beautiful room,
finished
the tour, and then I did two gigs last night, so I started the new one already.
So 900-odd dates. So can you give, geographically, just give us a dot-to-dot of that, where I mean, not all the dots.
It's 45 countries and 933 dates. So it's, I'll be honest, that'd be the rest of the show, and I think it might be dull for listeners.
Okay.
But everywhere, man.
What's the newest place you played, where you haven't played before?
I'm just trying to think. The American stuff, like, it's the secondary cities.
that are interesting
no,
for me.
No, country-wise, so 45 countries. New countries to the car list.
New countries to the car list were, I think, Malaysia. We did sort of Far East in January, so we did Malaysia, Singapore, Bangkok, all around.
Right, and what is it comedy club? For a comedy club, see another comedy club. What are the comedy clubs like in Singapore and Malaysia?
Theatres, my friend. Theatres. I hear the big time. All Thank right. you, Netflix.
Okay.
So it's that thing where you kind of, you go in,
yeah.
you find the crowd. And now, like, you think English was the kind of, was the biggest language in the world. It was 15 years ago. Now, thanks to Netflix and YouTube, it's just getting bigger and bigger because all the content, all the best content, people think, oh, the British Empire's no more.
Mm.
Culturally, we're the exporter of content. So yeah. there's loads of great stuff that comes out. It's all English speaking, so people want to hear it in English. So they're all learning it. So you go, the level of English now, it's phenomenal.
So we talked about the Indian elections, which begin, the general election in India, it begins on Friday. Ours takes a day. It's from 7 a.m. in the morning to 10 p.m. at night. Yeah. Theirs starts on Friday the 19th of April. Their election starts. Their election finishes on June the 1st.
Yeah, but I gigged there. I gigged there in January.
I was going to say.
We did three cities in India, yeah. which was phenomenal.
Right.
I mean, it was just like the most fun you could have.
So because the biggest English-speaking nation in the world is India.
Yeah, and it's people are so into it. Like, because no one goes there. No, and it's not because there's no demand over there. They love it. And actually, they got massively into, because the lockdowns were a big thing for, because people watched Netflix during the lockdown
and they
ran out of stuff and they ran out of English, Indian language stuff. So they started watching
Well,
stand-ups.
Netflix ran out road generally because they got the model wrong, didn't they? Because they took the subscription model over there and the announcement of that sent their share price through the roof. And then the Indian said, no, we don't do that. We'll sit through as many ads as you like, but we will not pay for TV. So Netflix had to rewrite the whole pitch. They came back, they retreated, the share price went through the floor. Then they went back with like loads of ads on Netflix, and the Indian TV watching audience said, fine by us, as many ads as you like, Netflix, just we're not paying. You do understand this.
Yeah.
Changed the model, went through the roof.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird company, Netflix, because they've lost, I think, 85% of their value 5 times.
Yeah.
So they keep on sort of doing, they're like, it's not a bother to them. They just keep on innovating and coming through. And it's
so do you know,
I mean,
do you know
it is the golden age.
Do you know the big cheese is there?
I know Ted Sarandos, yeah. I think I'm seeing him in May. He's having a barbecue. Yeah, anyway, it's a ludicrous barbecue. The barbecue's like it's like Stella Street. It's like I sort of sat down to eat.
Where is it? Where is it?
It's in his house.
Where?
It's Hollywood, baby.
No, but is it Beverly Hills or is it whereabouts?
I'm just trying to think what the neighbourhood's called. No, it's near the Hollywood Cemetery forever. The Hollywood Forever Cemetery. Right. And it's... I remember sitting down like to eat waffles and my friend Neil Brennan came and sat down and went, oh, this is Jerry Seinfeld. It's like, it's like Madame Tussauds. It was a bit Make-A-Wish. It really felt like, hang on, am I meeting all my heroes in one?
Can we just keep saying why Jimmy's on? Because I want to talk about loads of other stuff. Natural Born Killer is out now on Netflix. It's his newest Netflix special. How many are we down now?
4 Netflix specials. I think 12 specials overall, 12 hours. It's, you know, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I've got to say, I'm pretty happy with it. It's a bit different to the last one. A bit more talking about myself.
Uh-huh.
A bit more talking about being a father. Talking yep. about giving advice to young men.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty. I mean, my love language is always going to be one-liners and incredibly
but your
edgy
personal,
one-liners.
Your biographical comedy is a door that's ever more ajar.
Well, it seems like it's a natural thing to kind of lean into and talk about. But obviously, I'm going to want to make it funny and brutal and not get all sentimental.
Right.
So it's they're pretty brutal jokes.
See, I have a lane that is of that flavour that I want to talk about, but I just got to talk about Joe Rogan. So Joe Rogan, biggest audio content producer on the planet, bar none, by a country mile. Whoever's in second is doing amazingly well. But it's like, what was his name? David Duval, when Tiger Woods was yeah. winning everything. David Duval came second to Tiger Woods all the time. He would have been the best golfer in the world.
I always think that must be so annoying.
Oh, man!
But to be the second, if I was the second best comedian in the world, fantastic. But when I turn up at a theatre, the best guy isn't there. That's the great thing. But golfers, when he turns up, I'm the second best in the world. Right, I imagine I'll be... Oh, he's here, is he?
And there's a scorecard.
Yeah.
It's definitive.
Yeah.
Right, so Joe Rogan. So Joe Rogan's podcast, Joe Rogan Experience, you land there. He's in Austin, in Texas. He used to be in Los Angeles. What happens when you land there? What is it? Is it a building? Is it a factory? Is it on an industrial estate?
It is on an industrial estate. It's a wonderful show to go and do. Because I know him from... Yes, he was like... He likes working out in every sense. He likes difficult things.
Yeah.
Which is the great thing about Joe. He likes difficult things. So he likes working out at the gym, but he also likes working out at the comedy store. So he was always just there trying new bits all the time. He's a tidy little comedian. He's really good. So he would like be trying bits all the time. So he'd just be hanging around. So I've known him for years, kind of from just hanging around the place. And then the show was, it's become a huge success. But I love the way it became a success because it was all about authenticity. It's all about, I just talk about stuff that I'm interested in. And he's incredibly open to talking to people. You know, I mean, you get given a hard time for not knowing more about medicine. You go, yeah, he's a cage fighter.
Yeah.
You won.
But I'm asking some questions. I'm just asking the questions, guys, and having the conversation.
Well, it is weird that there's a I suppose that thing of like, why is comedy going through a golden age? Or why are podcasts so big? It's because people want friendship, right? And what is friendship? Really, when you think about it, who's your best friend? Well, it's the person that you have the least filter with. You've got no filter with your best mate. You could tell them anything. Yeah. And it feels like comedians on stage have got no filter. They'll say whatever. They're totally open. It's a very safe sort of environment for that. Whereas you watch a politician on the news and you go, oh, this is nothing but filter. This guy, it's totally fake. It's like you're pretending.
Yeah.
So there's something about like the reason that sort of Joe's show is so huge. It's like 3 hours long and it goes all over the place, but it's a real person talking.
And you've never been on before?
No, never been on that.
Did they reach out to you? Do you say can we come?
I was in town, so I reached out and said, I'm in town. He's opened a comedy club, which is phenomenal.
I mean, mothership.
There's the Comedy Cellar, the comedy cellar in New York. Unbelievable. Go. The Comedy Store in Los Angeles.
Has that closed down?
No, the Comedy Store is incredible. Incredible. And on Sunset. And the mothership now in Austin is, it's like a perfect room.
Yeah.
It's almost like a man with unlimited resource went, I want a comedy club. It's like Richie Rich built a comedy club. It's so crazy.
That is a good line. He laughed at that, didn't he? But you are right. Because when you get to his status, his stature, and when you've got things, you know, you've got a great perspective like he has, like you have too. He says, look, I do like gigging. I love comedy and I love hanging out with comedians, but I don't like the traveling. So I'll just build one. So I don't, round the corner from where I live, in between my house and my podcast studio.
It's Field of Dreams, isn't it?
What's it like there?
Field of Dreams. I mean, the comedy club's amazing. He's got like two rooms.
Right.
And, you know, small one, big one. And it's great. I mean, it's a great space. It's perfect.
You didn't play there. You ceiling. You attended.
No, I went and did a gig, yeah.
Oh, but not before you were on his podcast?
No, I had a tour, so I was in the theatre, so I just went up and did 10 minutes of new stuff.
Oh, you did?
Like, if I'm in town and there's a comedy club, I'll do 10 minutes of new stuff, yeah.
New stuff. All right.
Well, you're always doing new stuff. That's the thing of, like, the beast is you have to write stuff every day and try new stuff every night.
Yeah.
You have to, that stoic thing of, like, the world ordered a stand-up comedian. You have to honour that.
Right.
And when you break it down, what's that? Well, it's jokes. You write jokes and then try them and write jokes. And the audience tell you what's funny. And at the end of the long process, you have a show. And it goes on Netflix. And that's kind of a lovely moment where you go, okay, but it's like, okay, the next one.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to say it again. JimmyCarr.com for tickets for this next tour that begins, because he's had an hour off, so he's got to start a new tour. And Natural Born Killer is out now. Four Netflix specials. There's only four Netflix specials. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have more in the pipeline?
Yeah, there'll be.
Do you do a deal with them?
There'll be another one. Yeah, there'll be another one.
So at Joe's Club, they lock the phones away.
Yes.
Right. That's a good thing.
Yeah, that was the first time I saw someone do that with Chappelle, like playing with Chappelle, and he just puts all the phones away.
Right. People who don't know, they may not know Chappelle, Dave Chappelle.
Dave Chappelle, yeah.
Just tell people about Dave Chappelle.
Dave Chappelle is a sort of a cultural phenomenon. He did a sketch show called The Chappelle Show, co-written with my very good friend Neil Brennan. It's hilarious. It's like the best sketch show ever, and he's become like a cultural phenomenon. So he can sell kind of infinite tickets.
Yeah.
But when he plays gigs, he gets everyone to put their phones away because he doesn't want people to tape what's going on. And which is a great idea. People love it. People love, like, because when you're forced to put your phone away,
yep,
it's like, okay, well, we're here then. You've got to be in the moment. It forces people to enjoy the gig.
You set them free.
Yeah, it's absolutely fine. But they want that. They don't want the phone to be, because it's that dopamine hit of trying to get it constantly.
But once you know you can't have it, you are immediately released.
Yes.
Immediately.
It's why they should just ban them in schools.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have any phones. I mean, no one should be on social media before they're
16. You said so many pertinent things to life in general when you're on Joe's show. I played some of them out last week. I played your comedy should be taught in schools riff.
It definitely should be, right?
Because 100%.
It's like the tragedy of life, the idea that most people go through their whole life, they live and they die, and they never hear their own voice. They never really know who they are.
Yeah.
Because it's like a lot of life is quite mimetic, right? We sort of copy what other people have got, right? We've got our desires, what we really want, like we're hungry, we're thirsty, we're horny, whatever that is. And then we've got, and everything else is sort of mimetic. It's this René Girard, this French philosopher.
Yeah, mimetic desire, I love
this idea that you kind of go, well, I want what that guy's got.
Yeah.
And you end up,
but you don't know why.
Spending your life collecting stuff that you don't care about to impress people that don't care about you. It's crazy.
When you say you play 45 countries, right? Because we have bands that come on and authors come on and movies, you know, people who have made movies, and they say it's been translated into 37 languages. Or I think, well, what happened to the other guys? You know, so you play 45 countries. There are
196
countries in the world. So I mean, 45 countries is great. Don't get me wrong.
But you're saying not enough. You're saying what about the other?
No, but I'm just saying it's funny. I don't even know what the question is, but the it's screaming inside my head.
I mean, it's basically, why didn't you play the Democratic Republic of Congo? Well, because they haven't got a theatre for it.
All right,
I don't know.
But you know what I mean? There's some countries in between. Will you get there eventually? Will they get you eventually?
I think it's that thing of where there's a scene. You hear where there's a scene. So I'm trying to put gigs together now in Nigeria because there's a great comedy scene there. And I'm a big fan of like the kind of Nigerian music and Fela Kuti and stuff. So I want to go.
Right.
But it's like the comedy scene there. It's like, would I work there?
Yeah.
So you go, well, you try and put it together. You try and get, I've got a great like tour guy that puts together the difficult
gigs. No, you've got the greatest tour guy in the world. You've just come off a 950-day tour. You've had an hour off and he's back on it for 251 new dates. Yeah. He's got the hard job, not you.
Yeah. But it's that thing where you go, like, you want to go and play Japan. Like, playing Japan was incredible. And not for the... Probably half the crowd were expats.
Right.
But the rest of it, like, local people that go, yeah, no, I'm into this. This is kind of, it's cool. Or playing Paris is really fun. Because comedy over there, British comedy, is very cool.
Mm.
So it was weird to kind of go from being the guy off the telly to being, oh, this guy's very cool.
Yeah, yeah. Very cool. Yeah. And you say that when you play in Scandinavia, they laugh differently. They find you as funny. They find comedy as funny, but they just laugh differently. So they laugh, then they stop laughing and they wait for the next joke. Is that about right?
Yeah, there's less of a... Well, it's also that thing of like, there's certain places where it's more theatrical. So they're from a theatrical background. We've got musical, right? We've got the greatest tradition. We don't know how lucky we are in this country. There's a brilliant theatre in every town in Great Britain, up and down the country. Go and support your local theatre. Yeah. Go, you know, don't go to the big city. Go to the local town. Go to the local thing. There's great stuff on.
Mm.
You know, take a chance on a show. And so we've got those. So people have got a music hall tradition as opposed to a theatre tradition where they're at the end of the show, they watch you for an hour and a half and then they go nuts at the end of the show. You think, oh, they seem like quiet. And then they go crazy at the end because they're kind of trying to listen or trying to kind of focus a bit more.
So when you land, say, in Sweden or Japan or America or Canada or wherever it may be, and you do this joke writing thing every day, it's just a muscle that you flex every single day. You don't flex it. No, you flex it at night when you're on stage. Yeah. You work it out all day.
Yeah, just if I've got 10 new lines to try... That's a win.
So in Canada, you land, do you look at Canadian news or is it, where is it? Because you can't do airplane jokes. You've talked about this before.
No, but it's that thing of like, you've always got stuff that's like, every time you think of something, it's that thing of you never refuse the muse.
Right.
So whenever you have an idea for anything, you jot it down.
Right.
And then the writing bit is kind of going back through the list and going, what was I thinking there?
Yeah, yeah.
How do I get that? How do I reverse engineer it?
Yeah.
So I've been thinking a lot about kind of, you know, the structures of these things and you try out stuff.
Are you
just
fearless
try stuff.
Nowadays? Because Chappelle is fearless.
I think I think, what was the line? Someone had a great line on that. I shock people, he scares people. And that's like, you've got to get scary. My job...
Are you getting
scarier? Yeah. My job is not to self-censor.
Right.
Because there's no real censorship in our culture. You can say what you want, right? There's freedom of speech, not freedom of consequence. People will be upset at you, but you'll be fine. But you have to resist those kind of hate speech laws, the idea of like this encroachment of like... Oh, well, I'm worried that I might upset people, so I better not say that thing.
Yes.
You go, no, if it's funny, and if you're thinking about it, you think it's funny, you have to be authentic and say it and trust that the audience will get it's a joke.
Right. And so Chappelle is the most fearless comedian in the world?
I mean, Chris Rock is willing to...
There's a level, and then when you're there, you're there.
Yeah, it's like, it's whatever your taste
is. If there are 10, what are you then?
I think I'm pretty... edgy in terms of what I'm willing to talk
edgy.
About.
You always use the word edgy, don't you?
Yeah. It's because you want to be kind of right on the edge of what's... And what's the great thing about edgy jokes? Like, it only pays out. Having a dark sense of humour.
Yeah.
Dark, edgy, however you want it, controversial. Having that sense of humour only pays out when life is awful.
Mm.
When someone dies, when you get the diagnosis, when the world is just too brutal to comprehend,
yes.
Right? People that are easily offended, they've just got a white knuckle that day. At least we get to laugh.
Yeah.
At least we get, if you have that sense of humour, if you have that gift in your life, that you can sort of see the funny side in those moments. It's about perspective comedy, isn't it? It's about being able to step back from these things and go...
Zoom out.
Okay, well, let's detach from that.
Zoom out, write the joke, zoom back in, make everybody laugh.
Yeah, and it's, I think people more than ever need a bit of time off. You know, you read the news and it's just, is World War III starting? I need an hour off to laugh at something.
Yeah.
I need to just feel in that space, and coming out, seeing something live is... I mean, there's something very tribal about it. There's something about laughter that, like, if I had any advice, if anyone's going to watch my Netflix special, watch it with a friend, watch it with your partner. Why is Christmas telly the best telly of the year? I'll tell you why. Because we watch it together. That's why Christmas telly's special.
Yeah.
Because people watch it together and you laugh. It's a social noise. You're telling the other person that
well,
you get it.
Well, that's the thing with the old smart screen, is it? Because it's a device for one, which is great because it's always there, but it's not great from a collegiate point of view.
Well, here's the weird thing, right? I'm on stage and bands have this too. And you go, right, I'm on stage and I'm performing. And it's very grand. The audience are performing too. Don't think they're not.
It's a performance.
And they wanna have fun. They wanna show you they're having fun. They wanna join in. I mean, I love the heckles. I love people joining in and getting involved in the show.
Yeah.
Because it's very it's that thing of like when you leave the show, you want people to have different conversations than when they came in. You want them to be in a different headspace. I mean, basically, I'm a drug dealer. Right? But it's two drugs, right? Yeah. It's dopamine and serotonin.
Yeah, of course.
And the dopamine is the you don't quite know what's next. So a bit like your Instagram.
You're also a drug addict.
Yeah. I love it. But that thing of like you want them to be surprised. So it's all these kind of different joke types. And you want them to be a little bit shocked. And to feel like it's a bit naughty,
yeah.
And to feel like this could only happen here. This is special tonight, and then you want, and then that you know the serotonin, that joy of laughter.
I've never heard anybody talk about comedy like you do, so enthusiastically. I mean, that's not right. I've heard people talk about it equally as enthusiastically as you, but you seem to be on a crusade, and it seems to be like a good crusade. You're a very clever person. You're very committed. You really work extraordinarily hard. You've had your ups and downs. How many times have you been cancelled now?
Maybe I wrote a bit about it recently. I think 10 all in all.
Congratulations.
All thank you very much.
What are you going for?
Well, I mean, the Netflix special is out today, and we have a pool in the office. There's money changing hands as to what I'll get cancelled over this time.
Right. Any headlines you can give us on this show, bearing in mind that you've just been...
I don't think I can just even mention the subject matter that
right,
I'll be cancelled
okay,
over.
Okay, let's
but that thing of like, you go, what is being cancelled isn't a thing?
No, it's not. It's not at all. I mean, they're not very good at it, are they? The people who seem to claim to perpetrate the cancellation of people.
But it is that thing of going, it's different from criticism. So the difference would be, not to whinge about it, but you go, criticism's absolutely valid. I'm not for everyone. Jokes are like magnets. They attract some people and they repel some people. Like a magnet. They attract, they repel. There's people that come and see me live. There's people that go, oh, I don't like that guy. Well, don't watch. Well, switch it off. What are you doing? You've got a remote control. It couldn't be easier for you.
Yeah.
I was shocked and appalled when I subscribed to Netflix and watched his special. What?
So it's important, one of my favourite quotes is, it's important for us to get up every day and try and make every moment that presents itself in front of us better because we were in it, right? And life is a macrocosm of that, and I suppose that it's a wall made up of building blocks of such. So what do you want to do? Because you can achieve loads because you've got a massive voice now, you've got a massive platform, you're really clever, you're interested in so many different things. I mean, you've read so many books, you're into fitness, you're into to the mind, you're into to discipline.
Yeah, I mean, it is that thing of like, you go, it's about what can I... People ask the wrong questions. Like, people ask, what do you want? And they should ask, what can I give?
Yeah.
It's that thing of being of service.
Yeah. So you're making people laugh, yeah?
Yeah, which is, it's very joyful.
No, it's extraordinarily important.
I'd like to teach people how to do that. So I'm working on
a
book with that.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it?
So it's that thing of like, you know, give a man a fish. I can go to Milwaukee and make people laugh for an hour. But
tomorrow?
I'd rather... that they became comedians. I think comedy might be, if you think about where comedy is, right? It's very new, right? It's an American medium, really. You can trace it back further, but really it started with George Carlin and Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
Okay, are the two voices that came out and did something very different. They stood on stage and people came to see just them and it blew people's minds. And they're John the Baptist, right? Jesus ain't here yet. So it's that thing where you go, there's a golden age, there's so many great voices in comedy right now, so many incredible people with specials. There's something for everyone.
Yeah.
And is this the beginning? Is this like the Netflix shows that are on at the moment? Is it like the equivalent of seeing the Beatles on Ed Sullivan?
Yeah.
And all the people watching that now will go, oh, well, I might do that. I've got an interesting take.
Yeah.
And I've got my way of expressing myself in the world. And maybe I could do that.
You said you haven't said it like this, but this is what you meant, I think. You've said, I'm paraphrasing, that never before in the modern history of any art form has something been done by so few that's actually enjoyed by so many, and that only speaks to the fact that more people will start doing it.
Yeah. I mean, my friend Neil Brennan did a speech at Just for Laughs last year. He did like the keynote speech. And he said there's 60,000 brain surgeons in the world. 60,000. That's a lot, right? It's very few. There's 7 billion people. 60,000, okay. How many guys and girls would you trust to do an hour-long special? How many specials? How many people would you go and see live?
Yeah. Well, how many 100? Netflix commissioned? Yeah, maybe.
50?
Yeah.
You know.
100 on a good day.
Yeah, but that thing of going...
In the world.
But, and you go, and bands, how many good bands are there? Well, that's a lot of good bands.
Yeah.
How many good comics? Well, there's fewer. But it's like from that pool, it's just going to get bigger because people like it. It didn't used to be a thing. It didn't used to be you came out of comedy.
Why do you think this, not a resistance, but almost a lack of people seeing the fact that there's an opportunity in comedy? Is it because I think, what I think about comedians? I think it's so formidable a thing to be able to write some jokes, to have a look at the world, write something that's funny, see something that's funny, deconstruct it, put it back together with a punchline that people don't expect or can't guess, and then walk on stage with a microphone that's a bit bigger than this Sharpie that I've got in front of me and monologue. So I said it last week, speaking to what I heard you talking about. If a great actor goes on stage on Broadway or in the West End and delivers a 30-minute monologue as part of a play, because and he delivers a 30-minute monologue and she delivers and they deliver a but you do that all the time, you do that every night.
Yeah, I mean, 30 minutes, they want their money back. I mean, yeah, but it's an unusual job, but it's kind of great. I mean, I would encourage more people to get into it. It's also that thing of like...
Right, how might they start? Lesson one, day one. How do you start? Do you start by writing a joke?
I think you would start with jokes. You would start with jokes are the...
How do you write a joke?
The building block. So, I'm working on a book, kind of an instruction manual on this. So I think the first thing is to understand how jokes work and the structure. All jokes are the same, right? All jokes are... It's the sudden revelation of a previously concealed fact. So you tell two stories. And in the setup of the joke, you tell a story, and there's an assumption made by the listener, and the assumption turns out to be erroneous, and they realise they've made a mistake. And so the simplest thing to think about is someone walking along and they trip over and it's funny. Well, why is it funny? Well, the story was they're walking along, and then, oh, that isn't the story. They tripped up. It went a different way. So it's that thing of it's pattern recognition, which is what kind of gives humanity the edge over everything else, right? Everything we have is pattern recognition. I think comedy is genuinely important to our evolution. Like, we notice difference. It's linguistic expertise. It's the ability to kind of to vocalise and to communicate something with nuance. It's the reason we have a society.
Your rhythm is garage. You know that when you talk.
92 beats a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, 92 beats a minute is the proximal speed of cognition for most human beings.
Yeah.
It's the speech speed. So you want to hit the beat at 92 beats a minute. All great speakers do it. Some of them do it very slowly. Some of them do it fast, but they're trying to, you're trying to hit that. So I listen to a playlist before going on to try and get that, the rhythm right.
And so you talk about pattern recognition from ideas and from banana skins, potential banana skins on the floor, metaphorically.
Yeah.
And so the pattern recognition goes through to the rhythm of the person you're watching on stage because you feel comfortable with the way they speak and the frequency at which they're going to deliver their jokes. So you're a quick guy, then they'll have longer people telling bigger jokes.
Well yeah, and everything's kind of made up of, it's the building, but I think some people... If you're a casual observer, it's like if you listen to music. Music's very beautiful. It's non-verbal communication. It's gorgeous. And it gets us somewhere. It gets us in our hearts. We understand it.
Mm.
If you listen to, I don't know, Paco Bal's Canon, you don't need lyrics. You know what it's about.
Yeah.
It speaks to you. It's beautiful. And I think with there's something about, like with comedy, people know in an audience, okay, right, so... He's going to surprise me.
Yeah.
But then they turn off that bit of their mind that goes, oh, well, I'm waiting for the surprise then.
Yeah.
And they just enjoy the moment. They enjoy that thing. And it's, I don't know, it strikes me as a thing that many more people could do.
Do you remember the first time you took the stabilizers off the bike when it came to being edgy? Because you didn't start off being edgy.
No, it's kind of lots of wordplay was kind of initially the thing.
Yeah, I remember that. Do you remember edge number one?
I think I do, actually. I think it was a heckle thing. I think it was Edinburgh, very late at night. There was a show that used to start at 1 a.m, and I was doing it with Johnny Vegas,
right,
who was kind of laid out on a mattress backstage.
Nice.
And he was like, and Vegas
night.
Sort of took me, you know, I mean, listen, I'm there in a suit. I'm looking exactly like I look now. And he's drinking pints of Cointreau and Bailey's together, which he called a luxury Gaviscon.
Mm-hmm.
And he went, don't be like me, Jim. don't be like me, just do your own thing. I remember kind of going up in there, it was like a bear pit of a room, and people are heckling, and you start saying incredibly cruel things back. And I think life is about incentives, right? Life is about incentives. You want ants, put down sugar. Those big laughs, the big, oh, wow. There's a real sense of relief there. It's a different level.
Was it a different laugh?
Yeah, it's a different thing.
Number one was a different laugh.
It's that. It's the whoosh.
And do you think, into the ooh, room.
Yeah.
I like the
taste
of that.
I've got a couple in the new show where you go, oh, and people go, he said what?
I know.
What?
This is why the one show get you to sign that form.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, but it's not, that's also genuinely my sense of humour. It's like partly I do that because it's rewarded and people like it. Partly that's authentically who I am. That's what I laugh at. Sometimes I see mild stuff and I can enjoy the craftsmanship of it, but it doesn't make me laugh in that guttural, weird thing that I do.
Yeah, yeah. When did you first laugh on the inhale? Have you always laughed on the inhale?
Yeah, but I think on stage, I don't think I did it until... I think it was like Rob Brydon pointed it out on a Big Fat Quiz. And I felt really comfortable, felt very much myself.
Because I tried it.
The story in showbiz is like you become... Like you had this from the jump. I remember you on local London radio years ago on a Sunday morning. And it was like that thing where you always had an uncanny ability to be yourself. And I think I started off in showbiz and I was very uptight for the first... sort of 10 years, and then you become a little bit looser.
Forever. Still. You think you're not uptight now. In 10 years' time, you'll be saying you're still uptight.
Yeah.
When you were 50. 50?
Yeah, 50, yeah.
Heading towards 51. So
the other great thing about comedy, everyone does their best work in their 50s.
That's what you said.
It's kind of great, though, isn't it?
And maybe beyond.
Until I'm 60.
I tried to do your laugh on the inhale.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it because you get out, because you're, it's like you're not taking in any oxygen. I know it sounds crazy because you're on the inhale, but I couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's like, it's a weird seal. It's a very odd, it's not, I never thought it was that weird because it was the second weirdest laugh in my house.
Right.
My mother had a much weirder laugh. So I think the reason, the backstory, if this is the comic book Batman, Spider-Man origination, why is he a comedian? My mother had narcolepsy, the sleep disorder. Mm. And she had, and it often goes with it, she had a narcoleptic laugh. So when she laughed, she made no noise. But have you ever met someone that just kind of weirdly rocks when they laugh? They kind of lose muscular control when they laugh.
I like those laughs.
It's phenomenal. It's great to see in an audience as well, because you're getting no noise out of it, but you can just see someone quietly sink into their seat. So my mother would physically collapse when she laughed. So our thing when we were kids was, if she was driving, if you could say something genuinely funny enough and then have to grab the steering wheel, and it was just fun. Just fun. To make your mother laugh, I think most comedians, I've often said this, I think the question for most comedians is, which of your parents was sick?
I know.
You know, it's that thing where we're a thermostat for mood, right? I'll go into a room with 1,000 people and I'll change the state of the room. And I learned that through being in a house where it was a weird atmosphere when I was a kid with a depressive mother and having to make it okay. And she was hilarious as well, as depressives often are. Mm. It's that thing where, what is depression? It's like the instrument through which you see the world is defective.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Something else you said that I really, really like is, you know, when we witness something today in our lives, in the next hour, for the next few hours, for the rest of the week, for the rest of the month, for the rest of ever, don't tell me you didn't like it. Tell me what you learned. You said that.
Yeah.
That
is good.
You said, you know, other comedians, you know, they come and say, I saw this comedian, they're talking to you, I saw this comedian, I didn't like him. And you say... You say something more profound, more profane than this. And you said, I don't care whether you liked him. What did you learn?
Yeah, but it's that thing of like, be a professional.
So, it's cool though, man.
Be a professional. I think like it. You get that with musicians more. Musicians are very respectful of other musicians. It's that thing where you go, someone could be a rock and roll star and they see someone play country music well or classical well and they get it.
Yeah, yeah.
They go, yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah,
and that what comedy's missing is a language. So music's got a language, so you can play around the world with other musicians. Mm. Comedy hasn't quite got the language yet because it's newer. It's a newer thing, and it feels like it's not a new thing. It feels like, oh, no, it's been going on for ages, but this is... It's special.
All right, 251 dates starting tomorrow in Milwaukee.
Yeah. Funny. I know, I'm everywhere on this one.
200... Oh,
I'm doing a weird thing.
Look
on this one. I'm doing...
They're crazy. So
but I'm doing two a night, Chris.
What's that?
Two a night.
Yeah, so sometimes you stick a third in, don't you?
No, I don't do a matinee, but I do a seven.
You do a tea time, don't
I
you?
Do a 7 and a 9:30.
Yeah.
Because I figure people either go for dinner and have drinks before or after.
Killarney,
I think it works.
Cork. Eastbourne, Dublin, St Albans, and then you...
I put the arenas in at the end.
Portland, arenas.
I'm doing like a couple of weeks of arenas at the end, just because I wanted to get outside my comfort zone. I think there's a lot to be said for imposter syndrome.
Yeah, here's
the
thing.
I love the idea of feeling like,
here's the thing. If getting out... When does getting out of your comfort zone become a comfort zone? Because I was talking to James about this earlier on, to Tim from James, and he was saying, but you've always been like that. You know, you've always said things off the cuff. I said, yeah, but if saying things off the cuff becomes your norm, then you have to say things on the cuff for a bit. Do you know what I mean?
I kind of know what you mean. I think it's that thing of like the new challenge, the new thing that you go, what's the dragon? What's the thing we're going to do? We're lucky, right? Because we like hard things. Yeah. You like difficult stuff.
I love it, yeah.
You like difficult stuff.
I feel alive.
Why are you doing the marathon this weekend? It's not easy.
So I can talk about it every day.
Yeah.
But it's... Because I'm not going to be a vegan.
But there's no... I mean, the great thing is there's no drug testing for you, is there?
Well, no.
I mean...
Not so far.
You could win this thing.
I really could.
I can make some calls.
That's my intention.
We can get some guys.
Hi, guys. Loving Jimmy Carr. Loved his take on jealousy, envy, and how laughter is so important. We talked about that last week because we played a couple of clips of you. Danny in the Cotswolds. Could this interview with Jimmy be any more compelling? I could listen to this for hours, but she sent that a few minutes ago. She could be done by now. Chris and Lisa, listened to Jimmy's book, Before the Laughter, and it was amazing, so moving and so insightful. That was born out of COVID?
Yeah, that was born out of COVID. It was either start a podcast or write a book. I did the dignified thing.
Rachel says, can you ask Jimmy if he saw the eclipse while he was in America?
I did not see the eclipse.
Only from the stage.
I don't think I was in America for that. When was I?
No,
I was somewhere.
I
was on a plane somewhere.
I kept telling people you were in America last week, but you weren't. That's my fault.
Okay, well, that's all right.
Jimmy, I love you to death, man.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on. It's such a pleasure.
Netflix special, Natural Born Killer, out now on Netflix. Tour, Last Funny. UK tour begins on Wednesday, 1st of May. Folks, and tickets are more information at jimmycarr.com. Thank you.
You're the best. You guys are the best.
You're
Thank
the
you
best.
So much.
You're the best. No, you're the best. No, best. You're the best.
Craving some great 80s music? Play Virgin Radio 80s Plus. I want your love. On DAB Digital Radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, and at virginradio80splus.co.uk. I got my mind set on you. Even if we're just dancing in the dark. Love Chris Evans. Woo! Love the 80s. Virgin Radio. 80s Plus.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.